And welcome in the latest edition of Tony Talk right here on Scoops with DannyMac.com. I'm Fox 2 Sports Director Martin Kilkman, along with the Hall of Fame manager, Tony La Russa. And we want to remind everybody to subscribe. That way it's delivered directly to you each episode, each week. You can do that at Google or iTunes. Just get signed up and it will be delivered to you each and every week. I thought it'd be fun, Tony, instead of where in the world is Waldo, where in the world is Tony? And your duties with the Red Sox have you on the road this week.
Yes, part of what you do working with Dave Dombrowski upstairs is that on occasion you want to check out the minor league situation. So after a couple of days in New York at the Yankee series, the ideal thing is when you come to a minor league city that you won't be able to see 5 days because you can see the whole rotation. So last Saturday I came down to Greenville, South Carolina. We have our club in the South Atlanta League, and it's really a great situation, and today would be the fifth day that I see them, and I head back to Boston. It's a pleasure to watch, you know, the young guys early in their career, and especially in a situation like Greenville. This is really a nice one.
And it's got to be a little different vibe. I'm sure a lot of big leaguers are still hungry, and they're dedicated to their craft, but, boy, those young guys, I mean, wide-eyed and just dreaming big. I mean, you can probably relate a little bit, too, but I would think that there's a real hunger with those guys.
They got their whole career ahead of them. And, you know, these are times where, you know, they're just getting started and trying to see how their talents can become skills. So it's a progression. You know, a couple of guys I saw last year, you know, when they first signed, and now they're in their second year, and you can see them getting better. You know, I remember I played a lot of years in the minor leagues, and sometimes the conditions were not great, but the situation has all over our country has improved dramatically, and you get really nice ballparks. But you still have, like today, when the game is over, these guys don't get on a bus and drive 9 hours tonight after the game and play tomorrow in West Virginia. So some of the bus trips are still the same.
Tony's in Greenville, South Carolina. One of our presenting sponsors is Greenville University, located in Illinois. Greenville.edu. More information on this world-renowned university. Also, Triad Bank, located in Frontenac. Victory Men's Health, now with two locations, victorymenshealth.com for more information. And our good friends at Marie Davila Senior Living. We're talking about younger players. Also this week, the MLB draft. I'm curious how it's evolved over the years. You were a bonus baby. And we don't use that term anymore, I don't think. But because of that, if I read correctly, you had to be in the big leagues because of that, correct?
Yeah, I signed in the summer of 62. And in those days, there was no draft. The first draft was 1965. So, you know, literally graduated from high school. And as soon as the commencement exercise were over, went to our house. And scouts that were interested could make their presentation. So, you know, I had a solid high school career, and had a number of offers, and about 3 in the morning signed with the Kansas City A's. Now, the rules in those days, if you signed for whatever the level of bonus was, the next year, if you didn't protect them on the major league team, they were available to be taken by another organization. So that's the only way that at age 18 I would have been a major leaguer. I didn't try to be anything special, but like Sandy Koufax was part of that rule years ago. And, you know, it was unfortunate because the worst thing that a young guy can do is get to the big leagues before he deserves to get there.
And right now with the MLB draft, I think it's really been the last, you know, 20, 30 years probably. The debate is always high school versus college. You're in the meetings with the Red Sox organization. I'm just curious, is that still sort of an internal debate every year, whether high school is the route to go or somebody who's put in a couple of years at the collegiate level?
Probably the best question you can ask, Martin. And then it comes from, you know, whether you're talking about the teens making a decision to take a high school senior or take a college junior. But the other side is the more difficult question. And that's if you're the young player and you've got your mother and dad and whoever your advisors are, and you're trying to decide between signing a professional contract in your late teens or going 3 years to college to mature physically and mentally, and it can be a really difficult choice, and some of it depends on your situation. And I look at it now, and probably unless the money is substantial, and I think normally the college experience is worth making that decision, because it does you know, you get 3 years older before you get into having to play baseball for a living, and it is a different lifestyle. You know, I remember at 17 years old, it was an awakening for me to actually be a professional.
And I think over the years, Andy Bennis has talked about it, but when you're the number one guy, and he was in the summer of 1988, and he had a great career, made a lot of money and pitched in some big games, but you kind of carry that wherever you go. I mean, that's, and for all these guys, I think if you're a top five, top 10 pick, there's sure now there's a lot of money that comes with it, but that's, it can also be a little bit of a burden for guys to live up to the hype, and maybe they get moved along quicker because they have that label attached.
I think the way I would describe it would change what you just said from a label to a lot of a burden. It really is a burden. And I think if you look at the history of number ones, I think the majority do not make it. And I don't think it's necessarily because teams did not evaluate, because talk about a challenge for scouting, especially at the high school level. You know, you're projecting what the guy's going to be as he gets older. You know, you take that talent and you try to project it. It's really a tough call. These scouts are amazing. In college, you've got, you know, another 3 years to observe them. But still, if you get a label, if you have a number one label, it is really an attention-getting thing that is very difficult for a lot of pitchers and players to handle. And I think it, in many cases, it stunts their growth. So guys that can make it, you know, I think like a Buster Posey that comes to mind that I've gotten to know, you know, it, and he becomes a star. If you can make it as a number one, it shows that you have not just talent, but you've got that mental toughness to be able to handle the burden, the distractions.
Well, during the recent hockey run, Blues mania going wild in St. Louis, I'm sure the Bruins fans feel the same way. But one of the great things we've been able to see in town is the video of Craig Berube, the coach, going into the locker room, the game's over, dressing room, talks to the players, and he gives them a little speech or this or that or the other, makes a few comments. It's kind of fun to get the insider look, and I was wondering, how often does that happen in baseball where the manager addresses the team? I mean, it's not a standard thing, right? You don't go in after every game and say, here's what we did right, here's what was great, here's our next game. I mean, how often does that take place?
Well, the key is the sport. I mean, it happens a lot in football because you play 16 times once a week. It doesn't happen quite nearly as often in basketball because you play 81 or 82, whatever. But baseball, when you play for 6 months every day, it is uncommon to go in there at the major league level and have a lot to say. Because normally, if you do it too often, you're well at your welcome and people will not see the priority or the importance of being in there. So you really are careful, not just in your postgame, but even in a pregame meeting. If you have too many meetings, they lose their intensity. So that's why it's important to have conversations, like during batting practice, for example, where you get your point across on a one-on-one basis. But the difference is, though, when you get into the playoffs, you know, then everything is really of the moment. There's a lot of urgency, and you can walk in after a game and say, hey, let's keep going, or hey, this is what we did wrong, and we're better than this, or whatever. But I think it's much more prevalent as you get towards the end of the season, and each game has more meaning, and especially the playoffs, you're more likely to have something to say. I can remember very quick, I think, of something that our fans will enjoy, making the best out of a very difficult season in 2002, when our organization lost not just Jack Buck, but Darryl Kyle. You know, our team, after we recovered from the sadness, you know, we really dedicated ourselves to those two men. And as we got close to the end and in the playoffs, it was common once it was over that we would take several minutes to rededicate what we were doing to Darryl and to Jack.
When you mentioned the playoffs, is there always a pregame speech? You know, I think maybe fans and media, we sort of overhype these things. We've all seen the movies and, you know, Kurt Russell and Miracle and the great Herb Brooks speeches. But how often does that happen? Do you set the tone before a playoff series? Or if there's a game seven, do you say a little rah-rah? I mean, again, I wonder how often that happens.
Well, here again, this is a really good question, because I think my answer will be one that our fans will enjoy. From the managing side, everybody has their own style. My style was always to prepare something on the off day before the first game of the playoffs. What you don't want to do is save your rah-rah speech and have it the first day that you're going to have a game, because it really distracts the guys from all the preparation, the study that they're thinking about getting hitters out or getting base hits. So I would have it the day before when the off day. And then maybe post games if there was something that I wanted to add. But the other part that I thought that would be, I'm really looking forward to including for the show, is that, for example, in 2006, when we got in with the 83 wins, which was misleading because we had a really, you know, nice club, good lead, and everybody got, a lot of guys got hurt. And it wasn't until the end that all of a sudden, you know, that Eckstein and Edmonds and Roland and Albert, you know, we got more like our club. Well, what happened post-game there was a curation of Jim Edmonds. It had not happened in the years before, you know, the Cardinal years before that we got in the playoffs. But Jim came up with the idea of a most valuable player. And he had, I can't remember exactly what the prop was that he gave as an award. But after a game that we won, he'd get up and he'd pick somebody. And it really was something that the team rallied around and was, you know, gave you an extra motivation and something you look forward to. Hey, I want to be the guy. And once you're in there and you're, you know, winning a game in the playoffs is really exciting, especially as you count down. And like we did that year, you know, we did get the 11 wins. They look forward to having the fun of celebrating the MVP. And at some point, maybe a good question when you see Jim to ask him about, you know, how he pulled that off, what the prop was, and maybe some of the choices. Obviously, David Eckstein was up there at times. But the reason I like that so much is when you get the team involved and they start taking accountability and responsibility and they work together with the coaching staff, that's very powerful.
I'm thinking, was it a baseball? Did he present some sort of game ball, kind of the football idea? And again, I wasn't in the locker. I was just thinking that it was something along with, we'll ask Jim about that. It's a great point because during that run, it did become sort of a rallying cry. Now, there were other occasions where you were just pissed off and you'd go in there, right, and yell at the guys. And you said, I think on later occasion, you felt bad, like when you flipped the food. Was in Minnesota, and you said you felt bad later, but you were making a point because you were just torqued off at the team. So there's other times where you're going to go in there, not necessarily rah-rah, but when you want to let them know that you're mad.
It's really a simple occupation. I mean, you know, it's your team against their team in a competition, and you put quotation marks around competition. I mean, as a team, we're supposed to compete with our talents to beat the other team, score more runs. So the one place that was always the most basic, I didn't have a problem, nearly have a problem. If we competed hard and didn't compete good enough, well then, hey, we got to improve the execution. Let's go to work and practice better, learn better. But if we didn't compete, if our hearts weren't into the competition, that one got my juices going. And in the old days, you know, you tip the spread and then you realize it just penalizing the clubhouse guys. So I started just refusing to let them eat after a game. Now, that didn't happen too often, Martin, because we really had the buy-in from our players year in and year out. But occasionally, you know, when you'd have a stumble or a fumble. But the other part of the conversation is, since the great, great, great majority of the time, our team was really engaged in the competition. If we lost a tough one and you walk into the clubhouse and you see the guys are frustrated or discouraged or really disappointed and there's no energy, that's the time I would go in there and do the opposite. I'd go in there and get on them about being quiet and frustrated. And because, as I was taught, and then I tried to teach, frustration, discouragement, those just drain energy out of your body. And what you need then is you need to get some, hey, man, let's get, okay, we just got beat, but let's get ready to go. So I would always tell them, hey, I don't want to see you drooping in front of your locker. Let's get up. Let's get mad. Throw stuff. Break stuff. But at least anger produces energy and emotion. It's not, oh, woe is me. And more likely, I'd go in there for like 30 seconds or a minute and say, hey, we are not going to be discouraged and frustrated. Let's get angry. Take a shower. Let's get out of here, and we'll do better tomorrow.
We'll come back. Your questions for Tony right here on Tony Talk on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. We'd like to welcome aboard Be the Match, a great organization, now a proud sponsor of Tony Talk, our weekly visits here with the Cardinals Hall of Fame manager. Be the Match has gotten a lot of attention of late because Layla, the Blues superfan, has gotten a lot of attention. And her story, you know what it is, needed a bone marrow transplant. Here's what takes place. Every 3 minutes in the United States, someone is diagnosed with a blood cancer. They turn to the family first, but 70% of the time, the family isn't a match. In the case of Layla Anderson, the super fan for the Blues, she needed a bone marrow transplant. They went to the registry. That's what Be the Match is all about. They have the donor registry. She got the call. Her family found out she had a match. She had a donor. It saves lives. Be the Match is really a community. It's donors, it's volunteers, it's healthcare professionals, it's researchers. You can get involved. BeTheMatch.org/give. You can make a donation so they can continue the great research they're doing, helping save lives. That's what Be the Match is all about. We appreciate them being a sponsor on Tony Talk. One of our great sponsors on Tony Talk, Triad Bank, the neighborhood-friendly bank located in Frontenac on Clayton Road. They're just west of Lindbergh. Real easy access off Highway 64. Get to Lindbergh and you are there. Founded in 2005, wide range of commercial and personal banking services. And how about this? They actually have people behind the counter, people there ready to greet you, ready to help you. Business owners looking to expand, talk to the bank based in St. Louis. Those decisions are being made here. How frustrating is that? You're trying to get a loan for your business and the decision is made in New York or Los Angeles, not with Triad Bank. You can find out more at triadbanking.com. Home equity lines of credit, 5-star rated bank, $360 million in assets. Check them out, triadbanking.com. Since 1960, serving the families of St. Louis, Marie Davila Senior Living. At the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road, the beautiful fountain greets you for the 22-acre campus. Full range of senior living, independent living at the Villa Estate, skilled nursing, memory care, they have it all. Spacious dining room, salon, transportation around town, exercise and pool, private rooms, hands-on care. You're not a resident at Marie Davila, you are considered a guest. Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan and their sons live on site. It is family run and it has that family feel. You've heard Tony and I talk about how this was home for the legendary Red Shandings for many years. He was also on the board and helped the original owners start Marie Davila back in 1960. MarieDavila.com, we suggest you go online and schedule a tour. Less than an hour from St. Louis, it's Greenville University. Founded in 1892, this liberal arts institution offers pre-med, offers online student involvement. Yeah, that's right. They'll get involved in local businesses, immersed in the community, a great little town of Greenville, Illinois, less than an hour from St. Louis if you're looking to get away for college, but maybe don't want to go too far. It's right up the road from St. Louis. Great professors, really a great experience. Kids involved in the athletics, but again, everybody is really immersed in what they're doing on the campus at all times. Greenville.edu for more information about this great institution. And get those questions in, TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. Somebody inquired about the Sox, Yankees, because you had a recent series, Sox and Yankees, Boston, New York, and does it compare to Cards, Cubs? I think over the years we've always said there's it may be a little more edgy or nasty on the East Coast than in the Midwest. Give us an idea, having been a part of both.
Well, I think if you're part of a historic, a real legendary kind of competition, that it's something that is very special. Fortunately, with the Cardinals, I was able to observe and be a part of the Cubs Cardinals. And I remember my first time in 1996. We went in there in like May, and it was cold, and you know, and there was a lot of noise. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the game, "Let's go Cardinals!" I went, "Whoa, whoa!" But by the time you get to the summer, those things are just—I mean, there is so much adrenaline. And the fans care so much that it translates right into the players feeling something extra. I think it's said best when both the teams are good, then you got the incentive of it's good baseball and whether you can win or not and go into October. But even if teams were not that good, it was a very special competition. And now being with the Red Sox and observing last year and this year the Boston Yankees, it's the same kind. I mean, it's at times in their past, they've had more heated, you know, on field fights and stuff. It did get a little feisty with us at times, the Cubs and the Cardinals, but, you know, Dodgers, Giants, I mean, those things are all, they're all legitimate and they really, it's an honor and a privilege to be a part of it, just to feel that intensity.
kind of a random thought for me. You're seeing Luke Voit, St. Louis kid. Cardinals traded him over there. He's kind of a throwback. I mean, he's a right-handed bambino. I mean, just a big kid. You've probably seen more of him than you like being in Boston. But what's your take on Luke Voit? Kid from Lafayette High in St. Louis, played at Missouri State. And I think the thought was, well, maybe not a National League player, but, boy, he is just tearing it up.
It's hard for me to think of something that bothers me about St. Louis and the Cardinals. But that's one. You know, the fact that Voit is not helping our club in St. Louis and is helping that club in New York, that's very bothersome. And luckily there's a whole lot of plus points with the Cardinals, so you know you can't be perfect, I guess. But no, I mentioned it a while ago, you know, you got to be a competitor, and he's a competitor. He goes up there and he actually plays defense. Like, he's done a good job at first base, but he goes up there every at bat to do something to help you win. And I appreciate the competitiveness of players. It's a little harder to appreciate it when they're playing against you, but I do regret that he's not in St. Louis.
Yeah, I brought that up just to piss you off, you know, just to poke the bear a little bit. That was me looking for trouble. All right, somebody else said, harder to manage, the 20-inning game with the Mets or a game when you give up 20 runs, 2006. They said, I don't remember this stuff. I don't know how these people do, but they said you lost to the White Sox 20-6. What's the harder game to manage?
Well, by far, the harder game is being out of it and just getting blown out. But whenever it happens, you're hoping that you were in Little League with the 10-run rule. Let's get this thing over with and start tomorrow. It's such a bad feeling to get beat up, and then you exhaust your pitching staff, and then if you have to go to the final thing where you're actually pitching a position player, I mean, that's a terrible experience. The 20-inning close game, you know, that's just emotionally very and mentally very draining because – it's so close, and, you know, one hit here, one play there, and you can win. And in that particular style, you know, we actually lost that game. And I think I blame myself the most. I'm trying to remember, maybe I pitched Aaron Miles, and had I pitched Skip Schumacher with that 95 that he had, I think we could have won it. So I think I messed that game up.
Yeah, I'm not over it. It's amazing how you remember. It's such detail. All right, time for a little thing we do called Redbird Roulette. All right, I've thrown out this name, Larry Walker, because he's a good Canadian. He loves hockey. And we see the handshakes this time of year when the NHL series ends. And even though they've knocked each other all over, probably said a few nasty things, then they shake hands. And we saw that with the Cardinals in 2004 with the Dodgers. And it was Larry Walker's suggestion. I know you didn't have him long, but what's your blink when I say that name?
Well, yeah, that's the latest example. I mean, I really enjoy doing this show. I hope the fans are enjoying it, Martin. And that's a good example to bring up Larry and what he was to our club for a couple of years. And that very unique experience, and it turned out, you know, in 2004, we got him, and he, you know, big personality, big talent. He just, towards the end there, he was hurting, and he couldn't really be everything that he could be, but he was still plenty. One time we had a conversation in September. And he said, man, I don't understand why baseball doesn't do it. Look at the way hockey players beat each other up and shake hands. And I said, I don't either. And one night I said, if we play the right team or have a relationship, I'm going to ask. And it turned out Jim Tracy, who I have great respect for, we had a wonderful relationship. He was with L.A., and we decided that we were going to do it. And that wasn't lining up. We all just kind of met in center field. And Commissioner Selig actually called me and said, that was great. That was really good for baseball. And the next series, I went to Phil Garner, and he didn't want any part of it, so it's never happened again. We actually talked about that here in Greenville. I was out here with Andy Fox, who's our coordinator, and he was aware of it. And I think that baseball should put it in. When you get to the postseason, I think it's a great sportsmanlike way to acknowledge the competition. So Larry Walker was truly a great player in every faster to the game, and he played it with such confidence and flair that I just wish he could have been a little healthier there at the end of extending that great career.
It's not a stereotype that all Canadians are funny, but I think all Canadians are kind of funny. I mean, he's another example. He was fun to have around in addition to being a hell of a player.
He was in the middle of all the stuff that happened in the clubhouse or in the back of the plane or on the bus. I mean, he's a guy that's going to stir it up. He was very creative. His sense of humor matched his talent, which is saying a lot.
Tony, great visit. We'll do it again next week. Have fun in Greenville and wherever your travels take you.
Okay, Martin. Thank you.